Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode 300. Wow, did I just say that? Did I just say episode 300? can't believe it. Still can't believe it. Well, it's taken me about 4 years, actually a little over 4 years, but I got there. I got to episode 300. And, you know, I started thinking about what was I going to do for episode 300. I started thinking this about 6 or 7 weeks ago. And I was going to do something kind of unique, or maybe invite people to call in and talk about, you know, what they've been doing in the shooting sports or in the training world or new guns that they've purchased or ammunition analysis and things like that. But then I thought, you know, episode 300 really shouldn't be something special because I'm really not something special. And this show was really just about an ordinary guy like me sharing my journey for the last 4.5 years through being a shooter and a competition shooter and a firearms trainer and a podcaster and things like that. I don't really consider myself a special guy. I have the ability to communicate and I have the ability to get the point across. These are God-given talents that have been given to me, and so I use them. I'm really, you know, I'm not an expert-level shooter. I'm not an IDPA master or USPSA grandmaster or anything like that. And, you know, I'm not one of the world's top firearms trainers or anything like that. So I figured this would just be an ordinary episode. And so that's what it's going to be. Just going to be an ordinary episode. I'm going to talk about what I've learned through 300 episodes. Because I'll tell you what, I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot in 4.5 years and 300 episodes. Actually, I think it's been longer. Let's see, August of 2009 when I started this. So anyway, I've learned a lot. And so I'm going to talk about what is it that I have learned through these 300 episodes and sharing this journey with you. And some of this might be a little repetitive. For some of you, you might learn something new. Here's something I do know. I know that repetition is good because repetition is the mother of learning. I'll say that again. Repetition is the mother of learning. Whatever it is you want to do in life, whatever you want to get good at, you got to repeat it over and over and over and over again. You find me a good shooter. I mean, someone who's really good. Maybe they're really good in the competition sports. Maybe they're just, you know, very, very well trained, or they're a great firearms instructor. And I'll tell you what, they repeat what they've learned over and over and over and over again. They also have an open mind to new ideas and new techniques. So the first thing I want to talk about is repetition and open mind. You have to be willing to repeat, and I mean practice and repeat, what you know, and you have to have an open mind. That's one thing I've learned. And, you know, if you can't do those two things, you might as well just, you know, find something else to do. But if you really like to shoot, if you like to be a good competition shooter, or you just take your personal self-defense very seriously, like I do, you've got to be able to repeat and have an open mind. Okay? How many of you really take this seriously? And I ask you that question because I know there's some of you out there that are casual shooters. There are some of you that carry every single day like I do. In fact, I have two guns on right now. And you really, really take this seriously. And you train a lot. And then there's some of you that are kind of in between. Regardless, repetition and an open mind is highly important. So I'll start with that. And I say this because I've had a lot of failures. You know, I've had times where I go shoot an IDPA match, for example, and boy, I just suck. I'm just terrible. Why? Usually it's because I haven't done it in months. And usually what I find is when I go back and shoot another match again a couple weeks later, I'm better. And then if I go back a couple weeks later, I'm even better. And then if I go do a training class, take a training class, I'm even better. Or if I teach a class, I'm even better. The more often that I do it, the better I get, right? Well, hey, we all know that, right? Duh. But there's something inside of people that makes them resist and they take some time off. So, all right, that's all I'll say about that. Since this show is primarily about handguns, I'm going to kind of keep it to handguns in this episode. I may go into rifles a little bit. But I'll say this. Another thing I've learned is what the purpose of a handgun is. The purpose of a handgun, in my opinion, and you're going to get a lot of my opinion in this episode. It's why you tune in, right? It's a defensive tool. And what I mean by defensive tool is don't expect to be shooting two-inch groups at 100 yards with a handgun. All right? Don't even expect two-inch groups at 25 yards with a handgun. What? What? Bob, did you just say that? Don't expect two-inch groups at 25 yards? Yeah, I said that. Are there handguns that will do 2 inches at 25 yards? Of course. A lot of them. There are a lot of handguns that you could purchase that'll do 2-inch groups at 25 yards. But why do you need that? Seriously, why do you have to have 2-inch groups? It's a defensive tool. A hit is a hit. A hit on the bad guy is bad for him and good for you. Now, you want to be accurate. Don't take me the wrong way. Please, I don't want anybody to say, well, Bob's not promoting accuracy on his show. Of course I am. Right? Accuracy wins the fight at the end of the day, doesn't it? But do you really need that? And see, so many people spend so much time practicing on those groups, right? And if they're not getting, 3 inches at 25 yards, preferably 2 inches at 25 yards. Oh, man, they're all disappointed. And they're selling off their gun or they're making all kinds of modifications to it. And it's not right for them because they can't get that nice, tidy little group at 25 yards. And doggone it, this thing is just not what it's all cracked up to be. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because a handgun is something that you're going to use and you're going to use it very quickly. You're barely going to have enough time to draw that gun if you have to use it in a real self-defense situation. Trust me, folks. I've met and talked to enough people now that train and that take this seriously, and some that have been in gunfights. You're rarely going to have enough time to draw that pistol, much less take the time to perfectly line up your sights and shoot that nice, tidy little group. It's just not going to happen. So people are fooling themselves. They got this false sense of security when they go to the range and they roll that target out there to 10 yards and they're at a square range, at a public range, and they're popping off these groups the size of a quarter. Hey, that's fine and dandy. That means you're a good shooter when you're standing still and you're not moving and no one's trying to attack you with a knife or another gun or wrestle you to the ground. That's all fine and dandy. You can pop off these quarter-sized groups. Don't you love it? Don't you love it when you get on an internet forum about guns, or you get on Facebook, or you get on whatever, and people are posting their group sizes up on the internet, right? Oh, look at this. You can cover my groups with a quarter. Check it out. Okay, congratulations. Congratulations, you've got some of the fundamentals mastered so that when you're standing there perfectly still and you're not being assaulted by a bad guy, you can shoot those groups. But that's not reality, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not reality. So that's what I've learned. Any good modern handgun that's manufactured today, and boy, there's so many of them. I mean, there's not very many bad manufacturers of handguns. So pick one. Just pick one. Glock, Ruger, Smith & Wesson, Springfield, Kimber, Colt. I don't care. Pick one. Taurus. Whatever. Pick one. They're all good, and those guns can shoot good enough for self-defense purposes. My question is, what can the gun's owner do? Can the gun's owner shoot good enough? That's the question. I think that's the real question. So that's what I've learned. Or it's one of the things that I've learned. Something else I've learned about acquiring guns. Now, and when I say acquiring guns, I'm not talking about the method of purchase, although I might get into a little bit of that. I'm talking about picking out a firearm for you. Now, here's what I've learned. First of all, and this is, I don't mean any disrespect to anybody, okay? most gun store clerks, and I'm not going to say all, I'm going to say most, because I know some real good gun store clerks, right? I mean, Ben Branham works for a gun store, mostly at gun shows, okay? Ben's awesome. If I didn't know anything about guns, and I walked up and I met Ben Branham at the counter or at the table at a gun show, you know, I'm going to take every bit of his advice. But most gun store clerks don't know what they're talking about. Okay? They just don't. I'm sorry. They just don't. Most gun stores, unfortunately, the owners, I think they hire people on price, basically on what they have to pay them. I mean, I know that they want to get people that have a background in guns. So my friends over at A Place to Shoot, where Ben and I like to teach in San Antonio, those guys know their stuff. Okay? But I'm talking about, like, if you go to a big box store that's selling guns, and even some of the places that are not a big box store, most gun store clerks don't know everything about what they're talking about. Okay? You hear dumb stuff like all you have to do is point a shotgun at the bad guy and pull the trigger. You don't have to aim it. Baloney. As I dictate this podcast, I look at Facebook once in a while, and Ben is out at Ben's out in Las Vegas right now taking a shotgun class. And he's proving that you have to aim a shotgun. I did a video on it. If you go to my YouTube channel, if you search Handgun World on YouTube, you'll find my YouTube channel. I did a YouTube that says that you can miss with a shotgun. Or they say things like revolvers are the best guns for women. You know, come on. You know, I've heard this kind of stuff. Get a 45 ACP. If you shoot them, it's going to take half their arm off, and all you need is one shot because shooting twice is silly. Stupid. Stupid. That's just not true. Okay? 9mm may expand, but a 45 never shrinks. So, what's the point? There's marginal difference between the calibers. This has been tested over and over and over again ad nauseum. There's not much difference between a 9mm, a 40, and a 45. Not enough to really make a big deal about. There's some difference, yes. Don't send me mail and say, Bob, you're wrong. There's all kinds of difference. Yes, there is difference, but not enough to make that much of a difference. No, if you shoot someone with a 45 once in the arm, it's probably not going to take half their arm off, and they may not go down with the first shot. But I've heard that stuff said by gun store clerks. So that's another thing that I've learned. Okay, I've also learned you have to carry all the time. If you're going to carry a gun, if you're going to make a serious commitment to carry a gun, and you're going to go get your license if it's required in your state, carry all the time. Do any of you listening to this podcast right now know exactly what's going to happen to you and when it's going to happen to you? Do you know when the bad guy is going to strike and exactly how he or she is going to do it? Do you? I've had private discussions with people that say, well, I don't carry a gun because I never go anywhere where I might need a gun. Right? That's what they say. Oh, I have a pretty good lifestyle, and I never go anywhere where I might need a gun. If you think that way, may I suggest that you never go home? Do you realize that at home is a very likely place for you to need a gun? Do you realize that home invasions and attacks inside your home are a lot more common than you think? As a matter of fact, your home might be more vulnerable than some of the places that you go to. So if you go to, if you never go anywhere where you will need a gun, don't go home. Because there's a very good chance that you may need a gun there. Right? How silly people are. The things that they say. Isn't that interesting? But it shows that they have this sheeple mentality. This sheeple. I mean, they think that they're just perfectly safe inside their home. Nothing's ever going to happen, and they always go to good neighborhoods, and they always go to good places, and blah, 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 blah. Whenever you hear about crimes being committed, assaults, batteries, robberies, things like that, they're not always in the bad areas. Sometimes they're in the good areas. And besides that, maybe your plans might change for the day, huh? Maybe you got your day all planned out, and you're going to go to certain areas, But maybe it changes. Maybe you get a call from home saying that they need something and you got to drive to a different part of town or something like that. Or you get the idea you want to go check something out. Let's say you're on a shopping trip or whatever. You know, or you're going, maybe you're just going to work. And your boss calls and said, hey, can you take a detour and go do something for me before you show up? And you end up being in a part of town where you didn't expect to be. You never know what's going to happen to you. Carry all the time. Wherever it's legal, of course. You know, pay attention to your laws and what's legal and whatnot. Okay, so that's something else that I've learned. You never know what's going to happen and where it's going to happen and when it's going to happen. Okay, something else I've learned. Guns are not bad. Guns are not evil. Guns in the hand of a bad or evil person is a bad combination. But a gun is nothing more than an object. It's nothing more than a piece of machinery that shoots a projectile very fast that can wound severely or even kill. But a user of that firearm has to use it for a bad purpose if it's going to be bad. And, you know, I'm not going to harp on this subject very much, but you can find all kinds of crimes that are committed without a gun that are very heinous. Hey, how about the guy up in Oklahoma? How about the guy up in Oklahoma who beheaded a coworker? All right, he didn't use a gun to do that, did he? Right? The crazy guy up in Oklahoma recently up in Moore, he beheaded a coworker and he did not use a gun. Okay? How about the ISIS terrorists over there in the Middle East filming beheadings of reporters? Right? They're not using a gun to behead somebody. Talk to any law enforcement officer and they'll tell you that they answer lots of violence calls, either domestic violence or street violence. And the bad guy, the perpetrator, doesn't always have a gun. People are going to do evil, bad things, and they're going to commit crimes whether they have a gun or not. You know, I've learned that. And there's no law that any politician can pass that is going to stop gun violence, because can I ask all of you a question? Do criminals obey laws? Yes or no? Very simple question. Criminals do not have a habit of obeying laws, which is why they're called criminals. Okay, this is insanity. I wish this insanity would stop about gun laws. We don't need any more. It's ridiculous. Okay, we need to pass laws and enforce laws that will persuade, convince, or stop the bad guys from doing bad things. And passing gun laws is not going to do that. I could think of 100 different laws that they could pass that would make a huge dent in crime, but that's not what this episode is about. Okay? But anybody listening to this, of course they're probably not, anybody who thinks that passing another gun law is going to solve some of our violence problems that we have out there is just, they're just not playing with a full deck or thinking this whole issue through. It's an emotional issue to them. And that's the other thing. That's the other thing that I've learned. Okay. Whenever you make a decision about a firearm, like what kind of firearm to buy, for example, don't let emotion get into your decision. You know, use some logic and common sense. Understand, what are you going to use this gun for? Is this going to be a home defense gun that's going to stay in a safe all the time until you need it for home defense? Is this going to be a gun you're going to carry on the street? Is this going to be a gun that your son or daughter is also going to learn how to shoot? Is this a gun you're going to compete with? Okay, all those factors, they come into play when buying a gun. Leave emotion out of it. Don't buy it because a friend says, oh, this is a great gun. You got to get one of these because I got one of these. Okay? Emotion like that. Don't buy into marketing ads. That's something else I've learned in 300 episodes. Gun manufacturers are also very good marketers. And they run some very good ads out there. And they make some pretty convincing arguments as to why theirs is the best. That should be part of your decision, but not all of your decision. Okay, that was a call that I really wanted to take, so pardon me for doing that. But that should be part of your decision, you know, what the gun manufacturers advertise. But I got to tell you, folks, I've been in sales and marketing now 29 years. And that's how I've made my living. The first year I was not in sales, so 28 years now. And I've been pretty successful at it. I've done very, very well for myself, except for a couple of lean years. I've done real well for myself in outside sales and marketing. So I can recognize good sales and marketing techniques when I see them. And a lot of manufacturers out there have really good ads, and they have really good marketing. And even people who make accessories have really good marketing. It doesn't mean that their product is something that you have to have. I'm not big on lasers, for example. Okay, what I've learned is lasers can be real slow. Go take a training class, a force-on-force class, which is very realistic, or about as realistic as you can get to a real self-defense fight. See how well your laser does in a force-on-force class or a point-shooting class. Okay? Again, false sense of security, but there's some laser manufacturers that have some really good ads, and they've got some really good gun experts that have radio shows and podcasts backing them up and advertising their stuff. And a lot of people drop a lot of money on stuff, on accessories, and then they go to a training class, and you know what they do? They turn the laser off, or they pull it off their gun completely and say, I don't need this because I can't keep up with the rest of the class. That's what happens. So be careful. And again, I'm not saying that lasers are bad. If a laser works for you, fine. But when I say works for you, take that laser, put it on your pistol, and go take three or four different training classes from three or four different instructors that are teaching reality-based, you know, something more than just standing and shooting. And then email me or call me or voicemail me and tell me how well that laser works for you. I'm just not big on them. But there's some good marketing stuff and salesmanship on lasers. But the gun manufacturers do it too. The sight manufacturers do it. The ammo manufacturers, they all do it. And they're very talented. Let that be part of your decision, but don't let that be the biggest part of your decision. I think the biggest part of your decision needs to be actual use. And I remember saying this a long time ago. I guess it's been, I can't even do my math anymore. I guess it's been over 5 years that I've done this show. But I think I remember saying this several years ago, that you should rent and use no less than 10 handguns before you buy one. Okay, I'll say that again. Another thing I've learned, you should rent or borrow or use no less than 10 different handguns before you buy one. You know, it's like test driving a car. You're probably going to make a mistake if you buy the very first car that you drive or test drive. Most educated buyers, unless they really, really know what they want and have to have, are going to drive several. But I think handguns, you need to test even more. So, because remember, this is something you're going to bet your life on. 10 of them. Find some friends that have some pistols. Any of you listening to this and you live near San Antonio, you want to borrow some of my pistols? I'll lend it to you. I'll lend you some pistols and you can shoot some of mine and try them out. I have a pretty good variety, maybe not as much as some of you listening to this show, but you'll find most gun people, and this is another thing I've learned, most gun people are very, very friendly people. So let me make that the next point. Most gun owners, gun enthusiasts, firearms enthusiasts, whatever you want to call us, most of us are very nice, down-to-earth, excellent people. Man, folks, I've met some of the nicest people in this business. Since I started doing this podcast and getting out and doing some training, I have just met some of the nicest, down-to-earth, excellent people. I've met patriots. I've met people who are family men and family women. I have met just some of the nicest people. They've bought me dinners. They've bought me lunches. They've invited me into their homes. You know, they've come to my house and spent time with me and my family. They've lent me magazines and ammo when I was dumb enough not to bring enough of those to a class. I mean, there's so much. They've paid for things, and I just met some of the coolest people. And that's why it makes me so mad when the anti-gun people make us out to be these crazy lunatics that are on the fringe-dwelling part of society, and that we need to be stopped. Boy, anybody who says that about us gun people, they've just never been around us. So, you know, I've learned things like that. Something else I've learned that I think is very important in the firearms community, and I kind of want to bust a myth here. And that is that the caliber makes a difference. And I don't want to harp on this point too much, but I have to say it. I can't do a 300th episode, and I can't talk about what I've learned through 300 episodes without talking about caliber. And here, it comes back to marketing again. I really think it does. I think it comes back to marketing. You know, if you study ballistics, or if you go out and test this stuff for yourself, I'd invite you to go out and test this stuff for yourself. But there's a lot of reputable people out there that have been testing ballistics for a long, long time. And if you really look at the data and you look at what they've come up with, there's such a small difference between the calibers, you almost have to throw caliber out of the equation when you're making a decision as to what to use and what to carry. Now, here's where I think caliber makes a difference. If your favorite gun happens to be a .45 ACP, in other words, if you like 1911s, and by the way, I don't hate 1911s. That's a joke that I don't even know how it got started. I shouldn't say joke. It's a rumor, and I don't know how it got started. Ben says I started it myself. I don't know. Did I start it myself? I'd have to go back and listen to some old episodes or something like that. Or maybe it was one of my interviews with John Hathaway or something. I don't know. I don't hate 1911s, but if your favorite gun, and you've tried a whole bunch of them, is a 1911, well, then you probably want to settle on .45 ACP. Then some people like 9mm 1911s, but the vast majority of 1911s and people who like them are shooting .45 ACP. All right? If a Glock or a Smith & Wesson M&P happens to be your favorite pistol, you're probably going to settle on 9mm or .40 caliber. If you're an avid competition shooter and, you know, you shoot hundreds if not thousands of rounds a month, I bet you're going to settle on 9mm. Why? Well, it's inexpensive, especially if you're a reloader. If you don't reload and you buy factory ammo like me, it's the least expensive ammo that you can use for competition. Okay, especially like IDPA and USPSA. So I think the caliber, one thing I've learned in 300 episodes is I think the caliber is going to have more to do with the gun selection than it will with stopping power. A lot of people get all wrapped up in this stopping power stuff. You know what's stopping power? Stopping power is 3 to 5 hits in critical areas on the bad guy real fast in real short order. That's stopping power. And it doesn't matter what you hit him with. People have been stopped with 22s, and they've not been stopped with 45s. There's all kinds of data on that, too. Stopping power is how quickly can you dump rounds into the vital areas of the bad guy to make him leave you alone. That's what stopping power is. So don't get so hung up on caliber. Don't get so hung up on... Don't buy into so much of the marketing hype and marketing data out there that says, you know, this caliber or this round is a better stopper than the others. And again, ammo manufacturers, they're notorious for doing this. Boy, their marketing data. You got to buy our ammo. If you don't use our ammo, you're really lacking a lot of stopping power. Baloney. There's a lot of really good ammunition out there. I mean, I can think of about 10 different 9mm loads that are really, really good. I can think of a lot of 45 loads, and I'm talking about self-defense loads that are really good. So pick one that your gun likes. In other words, pick one that's very, very reliable and stick with that. Now, One thing I've learned about reliability. Okay, here comes some of my opinion about reliability. I've heard all kinds of things about reliability. I've read and I've studied and I've heard people say, well, you got to be able to shoot 250 rounds of your favorite carry ammo to consider it reliable enough for you to carry. Really? 250 rounds? Is that really what it takes? I don't think it takes quite that much. You know how expensive that is to shoot 250 rounds of carry ammunition? But then I've heard people say, it only takes two magazines. If your gun will reliably feed two magazines, that's all you need because you're never going to use more than two magazines in a fight. Well, that's not the point. Of course you're not going to use more than two magazines in a fight, most likely. That's not the point. I think your gun has to be able to shoot more than two magazines worth of your favorite carry ammunition reliably, without fail, to consider that gun good to go for you to carry. I mean, if it can't, I mean, okay, my Glock 19, right? 15 rounds in each magazine. Okay, so you mean to tell me that if my Glock 19 will shoot 30 rounds reliably, that it's good to go to carry? No, I don't think so. You know, I'd expect a lot more reliability out of my Glock 19 than that. My 1911, let's take my Sig Sauer 1911, which is the 1911 that I carry the most. Okay, 7 rounds. So in other words, 2 magazines. So in other words, if it'll shoot 14 rounds reliably, it's good to go to carry? I don't think so. I sure want more than 14 rounds of reliability because I never know when that gun is going to malfunction. And the last thing I can afford in a defensive fight where I'm fighting for my life, I can't afford a jam. Can you? So that's a bunch of garbage too. But this 250 rounds, I don't know. I don't think so. You know, now you're probably saying, well, Bob, how many? How many rounds do I need? I don't know. I don't know. That's up to you. I would say 100 is pretty good. I'd say 100 rounds is pretty good. I don't think you need to stretch it to 250, but, you know, two magazines of reliability is not good enough either. In today's day and age, the ammunition manufacturers are very good, and the gun manufacturers are very good. And look, if you can't get through 100 rounds of carry ammo and it's not reliable, then you need to get that thing fixed. You need to send it back to the manufacturer, and you need to have them make it right. And by the way, that's another thing I've learned. Too many people just send that gun off to the manufacturer right away, and it's not the problem. You know how many manufacturers receive a gun in that's supposedly broken, and they send it back to the owner with a note that says, no problem found? And it's probably the truth 95% of the time. I'm serious. I'll bet 95% of the time there is no problem found. You know why? Because somebody at the manufacturer knows how to shoot. And they're the one that goes to the range and tests that gun. They know what they're doing. Unfortunately, a lot of gun owners don't know what they're doing. And so when the gun starts to jam, or isn't as accurate as they think it could be, you know, if it doesn't magically start making them shoot those quarter-sized groups when they never practice or train with it, they think, oh, it's got to be the gun, and they send that off to the manufacturer. And they ask the manufacturer, please fix it. Well, the manufacturer can't fix your poor shooting. All they can do is make the gun do what it's supposed to do. Now, this might be offending some people, I understand. I understand, but it's reality. It's some stuff that I've learned. Okay? And it's amazing, you get on internet forums or you get on Facebook or whatever, and people are complaining. Ah, the manufacturer sent me back the gun and they said that there's no problem found, and this darn thing just doesn't work. Well, let me tell you what. If you have a problem with your pistol, and you send it to the manufacturer, and they send it back to you and they say it's fixed, and you have the same problem again, and you send it back to them a second time, and they send it back to you again a second time saying, there is no problem, and the problem happens a third time, it's probably not the gun. Okay? Now, maybe the gun doesn't agree with you. Maybe that's not something that you should be shooting. Maybe you need to have a different style of gun or something like that. So maybe selling that gun and getting into something that's more suitable for your method of shooting. Or maybe you just need to take some training from a good qualified instructor that can help diagnose why that problem is happening and help you fix it. Now, am I saying that it's never the gun? No, I'm not saying it's never the gun. Sometimes it is. Let's use my Glock 42, for example. Okay, something was wrong with my Glock 42. I think I know how to shoot. All right? I think I've been doing this long enough where I know how to shoot. And my Glock 42, with all the magazines that I owned, was jamming like crazy, both with carry ammo and with full metal jacket. So there was something wrong with it. Now, since I've got it back, it's been fine. So that's a rare case where, okay, it might have been the Glock 42. By the way, Glock sent it back to me, and they replaced all of the magazines, which we all know in a semi-automatic pistol, that's most often the case, is that it's a magazine issue or a user issue or an ammo issue. And that's all they did. Now, I don't know if they replaced any of the internals or not. I haven't bothered to follow up with them, but I really don't care because gun is fine now. But that's what I've learned. I'd say probably 90 to 95% of the time, it's not the gun that's causing problems. It's the gun's owner that isn't quite proficient enough with that pistol. Okay, something else I've learned in 300 episodes. I can't do this episode without talking about sights or without talking about about not using your sights. Now, if you go back and listen to some of my older episodes, I was really big on sights. Man, I was trying all these different sights, and I was analyzing them, and I was recommending to you different types of sights. And most of you know I even got involved with speed sights and thought that those were the greatest things since sliced bread. And they're actually pretty good sights. They really are. It's just that I couldn't handle the guy's way of doing business. And boy, I was all into sights. I really was. I was a big-time sight guy. Well, one thing I've learned, they don't matter that much. They really don't. I don't think that they do. I don't think that they matter that much. You know, if you're a skilled shooter, you're a skilled shooter. And so, there's going to be a lot of times, folks, you're not even going to use your sights. Please trust me on that. Please trust me on that. Talk to somebody who's been in a gunfight. Talk to a police officer who's been in a gunfight. Ask that police officer about whether he or she remembers seeing the sights. Oftentimes, they don't even remember using their sights because they didn't use them. You know, then I took that point shooting class that Roger Phillips taught. Roger's no longer with Suarez International, but he taught it when he was with Suarez International. That changed everything. Now, I'm not saying point shooting is the only way to go, but you may find yourself point shooting quite a bit, which means you're not really using your sights. And there are prominent trainers out there that just trash point shooting, and I don't know why they do. I really don't know why they do. Maybe because they're not good at it. Maybe because they don't know how to teach it. I don't know. Point shooting is a very, very important skill for you to learn if you are going to use your handgun for defensive purposes. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, point shooting means learning how to point your gun in the correct way so that you can make pretty accurate hits out to even 7 to 10 yards. You're not going to shoot those 2-inch groups at 15 yards unless you get really lucky when you're point shooting. But you don't have to. It's about speed and accuracy, and point shooting helps you do that. Okay? So I'm no longer all fixated on sights, no pun intended. I'm no longer a sight guy anymore. You know, yeah, I want to have decent sights. I'll tell you what, the only sights that bother me are the stock sights on a Glock. That's the only ones that really bother me. I just can't seem to handle those sights for some reason. So the stock sights on a Glock, those are about the only sights I can't seem to handle. Otherwise, any other pistol, whatever sights they put on it from the factory are good enough for me. Now, I do believe in night sights because I do believe that if you are going to use your sights and it's low light, you need to have some night sights because Ben and I have taught some low light classes. And the students have told us, hey, boy, I tell you what, this is a great chance for me to test out my night sights. I heard one student say, man, I would be doing horrible if I didn't have these night sights. So, but even so, even in low light conditions, you get attacked when you're not expecting it, and there's a very good chance you probably won't use your sights, nor ever remember using your sights. So that's something else that I've learned. And again, the sight manufacturers, and they're no different than the gun manufacturers and everybody else. Boy, they got a lot of good marketing hype that they put out there. But for the most part, it is what it is. Marketing hype. And what kind of sights should you get? Because hey, every handgun needs to have sights. I'm not saying don't have sights on your handgun. You have to have sights. But you may be asking, well, what should I get? Boy, you know what? That is such an individual decision. That's just as individual as what gun you're going to pick out. I used to make the mistake of recommending sights to people, and I don't do that anymore. I don't like to do that. I like to talk about the sights I use and what I like, but I don't like to recommend them because everybody's eyes are different, everybody's hands are different, everybody lines up the gun differently, and they, you know, they hold it differently, and they have different needs and things like that. It's a very, very individual, personal decision, and you might go through four or five or six sets of sights before you figure out what's really, really going to work for you. Okay, something else I've learned, and it's about spending money, and I might offend some people again. Hopefully I don't. But if you're going to carry a gun and you're going to carry it every day and seriously, or if you're going to be a competition shooter, or if you're just going to be a good recreational shooter that likes to do this regularly and have a degree of success, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you, please spend some decent money on your purchase. Please don't go cheap. What do I mean by that? Sometimes the difference between a good holster and a crappy holster, sometimes the difference might be $30 or $40. But come on, don't cheap out. Spend that $30 or $40 and get the good holster. Spend that extra $30 or $40 and get the really good belt, which, by the way, is just as important as the holster. Don't cheap out. There have been accidental shootings because people have had a crappy holster. Now, you've heard me recommend holsters on this show, and I don't recommend anything that I don't use or that I've seen people use that have come through our classes that have success with it. But, you know, sometimes it is only $30 or $40 difference, but get the decent holster, get the decent belt. And when you buy the gun, sometimes only an extra $100, $125, maybe $150 gets you so much better of a gun. Quit cheaping out, folks. Hey, in this industry, in the gun industry, you know what I've learned? I've learned that there are people out there that make some pretty cheap stuff. Yeah, there are. There are some people that are manufacturing for a price point, and they make some pretty cheap knockoff stuff. Or maybe it's not knockoffs, but it's just cheap. Why? Because they know that people sometimes don't want to spend so much money. We're talking about your life, ladies and gentlemen. If you carry, and even if you compete, hey, don't you want to do well in competition? Don't cheap out. Why would you cheap out on a tool that could save your life? Cheap out on something else that you don't need, that you spend money on every month. Okay? Cut out something else in your life so that you can afford a nice pistol, a nice holster, and a nice belt, and very, very good concealed carry ammo. I don't care if the concealed carry ammo costs $1.25 or $1.50 a round. Who cares? Isn't your life worth $1.25 or $1.50 a round? I don't care if I had to pay $100 a round. My life is worth that. So, ladies and gentlemen, come on. Don't cheap out. Now, if money is a concern, if you have a hard time, you know, hey, everybody's got financial issues. I'm no stranger to financial issues. Throughout my almost 53 years of life, I've had plenty of financial issues. Check out the used market. One thing I've learned is you can get good deals on used guns. That's something else I've learned. And I think I need to do a podcast coming up and dedicate it to used guns again. I did one quite a long time ago. I think I need to do another one. If you have some financial hard times, but you still want to get a good pistol, check out the used market. You know why? A lot of used pistols that are on the market, the reason that they're being sold is because of what I've mentioned earlier in the show. People didn't know how to shoot the gun properly, so they think that there's something wrong with the gun. So they go to a dealer and they trade it in on something else. So the dealer has a very lightly used gun in the shelf. You know, and I tell you, some of today's modern handguns, some of the modern service pistols, mostly the polymer types, the Glocks and the Smith & Wessons and the Rugers and the Tauruses and some of the Springfield XDs and stuff, some of those guns have not been used much. I've seen used guns on the shelf. I'll tell you what, I've seen used Glocks where that orange lubricant that they put in the slide, that's not even worn off yet. And that's how I can tell that gun's barely been used. Okay? When the factory lubricant is not even worn off yet, that gun's barely been used. And sometimes you can get it at a really good price. But most of those modern service pistols, they're built so well and they're built so reliable that those guns are not screwed up. Just because they're on the shelf and they're being sold as a used gun doesn't mean that they're messed up and screwed up. Even some good 1911s out there can be found. If you know what you're looking for, you can get a good deal on the used market. If you don't know what you're looking for on the used gun market, find somebody who knows what they're doing. Find somebody who knows guns real well. I'll help you. If you're ever in my area, call me up. I'll help you go buy a used gun. A lot of great deals out there. So you might be able to get a gun that once sold for $1,000 for far less than that. And maybe you don't have $1,000 to spend, but you got, you know, almost $1,000. Or maybe you only have $400 to spend. That's your top-end limit. You can find a really good pistol out there if you search, especially the used market. You can find a good pistol out there for $400. Even sometimes $350. There are very, very good revolvers on the market. You know, if you have to have something, You can get great revolvers out there in terrific shape for probably around $300 or less. So I'm telling you, folks, you know, just don't go cheap. And when I say don't go cheap, I mean don't go cheap on quality. That's what I'm talking about, because there are cheap guns out there and cheap holsters and cheap belts, even some cheap ammo out there that, you know, yeah, it's selling for a lower price, but it's garbage. Okay, let's see. What else have I learned? Oh, yeah. Practice moving and shooting. Practice moving and shooting. You know, the more training classes that I've taken, the more that I teach, the more that I watch other instructors out there, and the more that I read and learn about what happens in a self-defense use of a gun, everybody's moving and shooting. Nobody's, very, very seldom are they standing still firing at each other. They're moving. So be careful. If you ever take a training class and all they do is have you stand in the same position and they never have you move, or even if they might change the distance, but you're doing the same thing every time. You know, you're standing there shooting, and then maybe you take a knee and shoot, or maybe you squat and shoot or whatever, and then you go change the distance again, but you never really move and shoot at the same time. I would not call that a defensive shooting instruction. I would call that marksmanship training, but I wouldn't call that defensive shooting instruction. You're being done a disservice if that's what you're taught and it's being called defensive shooting. Now, unless it's a beginner's class, you know, I'll say something about if it's a beginner's class, I don't normally like to have beginners who have never done this before moving and shooting right away. Ben and I have done it, though. And in some of the Suarez classes, you know, you can find somebody that progresses real well, and you know that they're ready. And I knew that they were ready to move and shoot. And so some of the classes that Ben and I have taught, you know, somebody that was a beginner caught on real quickly. And by the end of the day, they were moving and shooting. But that's because it's part of our class curriculum. All right? Now, again, I'll forgive it for beginners. If it's somebody that, you know, barely has shot this gun, all they did was go get their CHL license, and they've never shot beyond that, and they're just getting started, you know, maybe depending on how they progress, if they're not picking up quickly on the art of shooting, you know, maybe them, you don't want to have them moving and shooting right away. You want to make sure that they're safe and that they got their fundamentals squared away. So you basically keep them in the same position, or you change the distances a little bit, and so on and so forth. But beyond that, I don't really believe that that's defensive training. That's just my opinion, and that's something else that I've learned in 300 episodes and through the years. I'm going to say this. I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Just because it's on the internet, it's not always true. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to say it one more time, and then I'm never going to come back to that. Just because it's on the internet doesn't mean that it's always true. There are a lot of keyboard commandos out there. You know, there's a lot of internet warriors out there, and it's a joke. All right, let's see. I'm going to move on. Okay, another thing I've learned. When you're carrying a pistol, it's my opinion, you need to carry something else in addition to your pistol. And that would be either a spare magazine or a spare gun. Okay? A spare magazine or a backup gun. Now, you might be asking, Bob, which one do you prefer? That's kind of tricky. Today, as I speak to you and dictate this podcast, I have two guns. I'm carrying my Smith & Wesson M&P Shield 9mm appendix carry in my Concealment Solutions ASP 2.0 appendix carry rig, and I'm carrying my Carr P380 in a DeSantis Superfly holster in my left front pocket. Okay, so today I'm choosing to carry a backup gun. Now, here's something I'm going to say about an extra magazine. You need to practice and see what you can do faster. Can you reload an extra magazine, or can you draw a second gun faster? Well, it depends on how you carry the second gun. I'm carrying my second gun in my pocket, so my draw is going to be pretty slow because it's going to be in my pocket and it's also going to be left-handed. So I would say probably a spare magazine would be faster for me right now. But I've seen other people carry a spare gun differently. Sometimes they're carrying it inside the waistband, and they can draw that a lot faster than they can an extra magazine. You need to practice, and figure out what works best for you. I'll say this, because the magazine is the source of so many gun malfunctions, I sort of lean towards carrying an extra magazine. Because, you know, I mean, it depends on where you carry that backup gun. But if you don't believe in carrying a backup gun, or you don't have a backup gun, then of course you need to have an extra magazine. And there are so many great ways to carry an extra magazine. I mean, just do your own research on carrying an extra magazine. There's so many excellent ways to do it and to conceal an extra magazine. But I'll tell you something. You know, John Payne told me something once. John Payne from Suarez International. You know, let's not forget, John is also a law enforcement officer. He's been in law enforcement for a long time. John's one of the best trainers over at Suarez International, but he's also a law enforcement officer. John told me one time, you know, he asked me what's the least used item on a police officer's belt. I'll say that again. What is the least used item on a police officer's belt? And I gave him several guesses, and I didn't get it right. And he said an extra magazine of ammunition. That's probably true. Maybe you cops out there that are listening to this, you can weigh in on it. How often does a police officer use his or her extra magazine of ammunition? So think about that. if it's not very often used, I want to say this. And this is something I've learned over 300 episodes, and this is something I've never said on the Handgun World podcast before, but I'm going to say it because I believe it. Okay? Since a spare magazine is rarely used, if you think that because you carry an extra magazine that you have more ammo for the fight, I think you're sorely mistaken. Carry the spare magazine in case you have a malfunction. And then get good at clearing malfunctions. Take some good training on that. But I'll say it again. I've heard a lot of this. Well, my gun only holds 9 rounds, but I carry a spare magazine of 8 rounds. So that means I got 17 rounds to use in the fight. Really? What do you think the likelihood is that you're going to be in the fight long enough to go to that spare magazine when you run out of ammo in the first magazine? Really? I mean, let's look at all the handgun defensive uses of a handgun. Let's look at all the data out there. What do they say? 3 shots, 3 rounds, 3 seconds. I mean, 3 shots, 3 yards, 3 seconds. That's what I meant to say. And maybe it's longer than that. Maybe the average handgun fight now is 5 rounds or 6 rounds. And maybe it lasts 10 seconds or something. And maybe it's at 7 yards. I don't know. But you think about it. What's the likelihood of... Let's use some common sense here, not emotion. What's the likelihood of you shooting your gun dry? In other words, you got no more ammo left. And going to your spare magazine to put more ammo in your pistol to finish the fight. Now, I'm not talking about if you're in the military. It might be very realistic if you're in the military. Of course, you're probably not using a handgun if you're in the military. You're probably using a rifle. But if you are using your handgun, you may have to reload to get more ammo in there. Or if you're maybe in law enforcement, maybe. But wait a minute. If the spare magazine is the least used item, or one of the least used items on a police officer's belt, then why are you buying into the false sense of security that you got more ammunition that you can reload your gun with? Because the chances of you getting to that point are very slim. So if 9 rounds is not enough for you, carry a pistol that holds more than 9. Carry a pistol that holds 15 or 16 or 17 or 12 or 13. Here's what I'm saying. Figure out what your comfort level is and get a pistol that holds that much in the first magazine. All right, my comfort level is about 9 rounds. This Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, I have an 8-round magazine, and I got one in the chamber. I got 9 rounds. That's about as low as I want to go for a primary carry, and I really prefer for primary carry, I prefer 12 or more for primary carry. All right, but that's my comfort level. So what I'd like, and again, I'm going to inject my opinion here, but I think that you should carry a gun that holds enough ammunition to be at your comfort level with the first magazine. Now, if you have a malfunction, you quickly get out your spare magazine. You know, you clear the malfunction and stick your spare magazine in there so you can stay in the fight. But if you think it's giving you more ammo for the fight, I think you're sorely mistaken. You know, and I hear that from a lot of people that carry 1911s. Yeah, well, you know, I got 8 in the magazine and I got 1 in the chamber, so that's 9 rounds, and I got another magazine of 8 rounds, so I got 17 rounds for the fight. I disagree. I don't believe you have 17 rounds for the fight, because I think the chances of you getting to that spare magazine, except for a malfunction, I think the chances are very slim. So you better be comfortable with 9 rounds in your 1911. That's what I'm saying. And if you're comfortable with that, fine. And occasionally I carry my 1911. And I decide when I carry my 1911 that for that day or however many days I carry it, I make the decision I'm going to be okay with the original 9 rounds. Yes, I carry the spare magazine, but the spare magazine I carry is strictly in case I have a malfunction. That's my 2 cents, and I want you to think about it. I want you to talk to somebody who has debriefed people in gunfights, and I want you to ask them, or ask someone who's been in a gunfight, if they ever went to their spare magazine to get more ammo in the gun. I mean, think about it. You know, most of you know I like the Glock 19, although I've been really warming up to my M&P 9 Compact. Really like that little gun, Smith & Wesson M&P 9 Compact. 12 rounds plus one, 13 rounds on board. But let's use my Glock 19, for example. 15 rounds in the magazine, one in the chamber. That's 16 rounds of 9mm good hollow point carry ammunition. I feel pretty comfortable with 16 rounds. And I think the chances of me having to go to another magazine because I've shot 16 rounds and the conflict's not over, I think that's very, very, very slim. Unless I happen to be sitting in a movie theater when the jack wagon comes in there with an AR-15 and starts shooting. And even then, I think my 16 rounds in my Glock probably make him run away quickly. Because most of these people are cowards, aren't they? Most of these people are sick cowards. And as soon as somebody starts firing at them, they either leave or kill themselves. Right? Haven't we seen that so many times in so many of these mass shootings? All it takes is for them to run into a little bit of resistance, either from a cop or from a private citizen, and they're so much of a coward that they either leave the scene or shoot themselves. So I can't think of too many scenarios, if I'm carrying my Glock 19, where I would have to go to my spare magazine to put more ammo in the gun. I can think of maybe going to my spare magazine because a malfunction has occurred. That's about it. So that's kind of my opinion and kind of what I've learned after 300 episodes and in 5+ years. Okay. All right. Enough of that. I'm already reading the hate mail that's coming to me from that comment. But hey, I'm just calling it like I see it. The next thing I want to say is don't do something stupid like I did. Okay. Don't sell the gun that your dad... Don't sell the first gun your dad ever gave you or your grandpa ever gave you. I did that. My dad gave me a shotgun. It was my very first gun. And like a dummy, I sold it. And I wish I could have it back. Don't do that, folks. If your father or grandfather or great-grandfather or whatever gave you a gun and it was the one and only gun they ever gave you or it was your first gun, don't sell it. Save the money a different way. Raise the money a different way. Don't do that. You know, there's great memories in those. And, you know, firearms have a lot of great memories attached to them. And when someone special gives you a firearm on a special occasion, keep that until the day you die and pass it on to your kids and grandkids, okay? And that's pretty much all I want to say about that. Home defense. Here's what I've learned about home defense. Thank God I've never had to use any of my firearms in self-defense. I hope that day never comes. Really. I hope I spend the rest of my life shooting, training, teaching others, analyzing this, and never have to use it. See, it's a great hobby. It's a great hobby. It's a great side business. It's just a great, fun, recreational activity. So I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. I hope I never have to use any of these guns I own to defend myself. I feel I'll be ready if I have to, but I just hope I never have to. But home defense. What I want to say about that is be careful again. Be careful of the gun store clerks or the internet commandos or the know-it-alls who really haven't done much. Be careful about saying, oh, I gotta have a shotgun for home defense. Gotta have a shotgun. Because it seems like the 12-gauge shotgun has been, for some reason, universally accepted as the great equalizer in home defense, and it's what everybody has to have. Let me tell you what, 12-gauge shotguns generally are not very fun to shoot. Especially when you put defensive loads, like when you put double-aught buck or number 4 buck or number 2 buck or whatever, they're not much fun, especially the pumps. The pump shotguns are not much fun to shoot with that ammunition in it. And all of a sudden now, if that's what you got for home defense, and the woman of the household has to pick up the 12-gauge and repel some bad guys coming in the door, and maybe she's never spent much time with that 12-gauge, and the reason she's never spent much time shooting it is because it's a miserable sucker to shoot. Even if you put bird loads in it, she hates it. How effective might she be with that? So, you know, for home defense, lose the mentality that you have to have a 12-gauge shotgun. And I think a lot of that comes from, again, the idiots who think that all you have to do is just point the shotgun in the general direction and it will, the bad guy will disappear in a cloud of smoke. I think that's where a lot of that lunacy comes from, and people think you have to have that. I'm not saying 12-gauge shotgun is a bad weapon, but, you know, if you're going to have that, you better be trained with it and know how to use it, and you better like shooting it. Why not consider a pistol for home defense? Why not consider the gun that you have spent the most time shooting? Why not consider the gun that you're the most accurate with, that's the most pleasant to shoot? Because that's probably the one that you're going to be the most effective with if that bad time occurs. There's nothing wrong with a pistol for home defense. There's nothing wrong with an AR-15 for home defense. If you don't listen to Tom Gresham's Gun Talk radio show or podcast, you need to. Tom Gresham, in a lot of different ways, through videos and through actually going out to the range and everything, he's busted the myth that a 223 round will penetrate more drywall than a 12-gauge. A lot of people think that the 12-gauge won't penetrate, and it will. A 12-gauge with double-aught buck or number 4 buck and whatever, it'll penetrate a lot more drywall most of the time than an AR-15 will. Okay. An AR-15 is not going to penetrate the drywall and maybe the brick veneer of a lot of houses. It's just not. My house has a brick veneer around most of it. You know, I'll tell you what, folks. An AR-15, people can be very accurate with it. Females can shoot it very well. Smaller framed people can shoot them very well. They don't recoil much. Yeah, they're kind of loud, but you can fix being loud. And they're highly accurate, and they hold a lot of ammunition, and there's a lot of really cool accessories that you can put on an AR-15 for home defense. So why not consider an AR-15 for home defense, or a pistol for home defense, especially if you're going to train a lot with your pistol or your AR-15. Lose that 12-gauge pump that you never shoot because you hate it, and switch over to a pistol or an AR-15 for home defense. That's one thing that I've learned. And I think people are starting to realize that. I think that's one reason why AR-15s are so popular. You know, that's not the only reason. But I think that's one reason why America's Rifle. No, that's not what AR stands for. But it's kind of a cool play on words, isn't it? I think that's why the AR-15 has become America's Rifle. It's one of the reasons. And just because they're fun, they're cool, and no, they're not evil. That's a whole nother podcast. I won't get into that so much right now. Okay, I got two more subjects I want to talk about. One is ammunition. Ammunition. Well, if you're a reloader, I'm jealous. Because I don't reload. I need to, but I tell you what, I got other battles to fight right now. And learning how to reload right now is not something I'm going to put on my plate. Maybe someday down the road. I'm jealous if you're a reloader, because if you're a reloader, you either save money or you shoot more because your ammunition costs less. You just have to put a little bit of work into it. Your ammunition costs less than mine. So congratulations to everybody out there who reloads. For practice, now again, stay away from reloaded ammunition for self-defense use. I did a whole podcast on this not too long ago, explaining my reasons why I don't like to recommend, or I wouldn't want to see anybody use reloaded ammunition for self-defense use. But for training and competition or going to the range and messing around, reload like crazy. Okay? When you're going to get ammunition for self-defense, I don't care if this is for your rifle or shotgun or handgun. Again, find out what your gun likes and buy the best that you can afford or even if it's not the best you can afford, but your gun likes it, and go test it. Go shoot some stuff other than paper with your the ammunition that you choose for self-defense. Shoot something other than just putting holes in paper and see what it does. And then stick with that and buy a lot of it. Don't cheap out on ammunition. That's one of the areas you just simply can't cheap out on ammunition. At the end of the day, folks, guess what? It's that bullet and where it's placed that saves your life. It's not the gun or the holster or the belt or the cool sights or the modified trigger or any of that. It's the bullet that comes out of the barrel that impacts the bad guy in a vital area because you were accurate with it. That's what ends up saving your life. So put the best in there and the most reliable in your pistol that you possibly can. Okay, and the last thing I want to say in this podcast, this 300th episode, and the last thing I want to say about what did I learn in 300 episodes? I probably could do 5 of these shows on what I learned, but I'm not. I'm just going to save it for this one, and I'm kind of summarizing. I might get into some a little bit more detail in some of the other shows coming up. The last thing I want to say is about training. Now, stop. Don't turn the podcast off right now, because I know some of you are probably thinking, oh no, here goes Bob Main again. He's going to harp on training. He's been harping on training for 299 episodes, and now in his 300th episode, he's going to harp on training again. Nope, I'm not going to harp on training. You know I'm a believer in it. You know that I think that you should get training. Okay. Here's what I'm going to say about training. Be selective about what training class that you take. Now, how do you do that? Well, first of all, there's a lot of people out there that say that they're instructors, right? Well, because maybe they went to an NRA instructor course. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with an NRA instructor course, but an NRA instructor course in no way prepares you to be a real good firearms instructor. I think what it does is it helps you learn the basics about how to be an instructor. That's about it. I took the class, so that's my opinion on that. Okay. When you take a training class, look at the instructor's resume. How many training classes has the instructor been to? What else does the instructor do? Okay. In other words, is the instructor an armorer, or is he or she, do they do something else outside their firearms instruction? You know, but again, look at, first of all, I mean, if someone's an armorer and they're teaching a defensive handgun class, well, I would look at that and go, huh? What kind of defensive training have you had? Now, if that person's had a ton of defensive training, great. Okay? If that person has years and years and years of experience of teaching law enforcement or teaching military, fine. Or, you know, if they've been there, done that. You know, if they're one of our great military veterans that served our country honorably and well, that I salute all the time and really regret that I've never been in the military. Okay, good, good. They've got a lot of good qualifications. You know, if they've taught law enforcement for years, okay, good. They probably have a lot of good qualifications. Okay? If they've taken over 120 hours of training and podcasted for 5 years and 300 episodes, they may have, they might know a little bit about what they're talking about. Okay? Look at their resume first and see what it is that they've done. I think that's the most important thing. If there's somebody that hasn't taken a training class in 7 or 8 years, I would kind of scratch my head and go, gee, is this person really keeping up with, you know, what there is out there to learn in firearms defense? That's the other thing. Don't go to an old-fashioned instructor. And how can you tell if they're an old-fashioned instructor? find out what kinds of training classes they've been to. Or talk to a student who's been to their class and ask the student, well, you know, what kind of techniques does this person teach? Are they teaching the old-fashioned modern technique, stand and deliver, you know, stuff that doesn't really apply much to gunfighting anymore? Or what did you learn? Did you learn some, you know, gunfighting techniques? And ask them. Okay. I think the best thing to do is if you can find a student that's been to one of their classes. And by the way, if you want to know about, if you've never taken a class from Ben and myself, go to handgunworld.com, my website. I have a class review page right on my website. I got a page where students can post reviews on our classes. By the way, I'm calling all you students right now who have been through our classes, who have been through the classes that Ben and I have taught, or even if you've been to one of my Suarez International classes. Go to my class review page at handgunworld.com. Put a review on there, an honest one. And if there's something you didn't like about our class, put that on there. I don't care if it's in the public. If there's something you didn't like about our class, put it out there in public. And I'll do the best I can to correct that in the class that we teach. And I'll let the public know that I'm doing that. You see, I don't have this mile-high ego like a lot of people have. I'm always open to improvement. You know, I practice what I preach. Repetition and an open mind. So check out the instructor. All right? Also, remember that there's plenty of room in the firearms community for all instructors out there. So just because maybe it's someone that you've never heard of, doesn't have any name recognition, doesn't mean that it's not a good class. Again, check them out. Now, what you're going to see next year is you're going to see some overlapping of instruction. You're going to see some overlapping of instruction that Ben and I do, and you're going to see some people overlapping with us in places that we've been to before. That's okay. That's okay. I'm going to say this to instructors out there. You better have a way of filling classes, because it's not easy. It's not easy filling classes. Not at all. I know, I got a little bit of experience at filling classes, and good luck to you. Unless you've got a really good vehicle to get the word out and get the message out, and unless you can communicate well, good luck. You got to be a good salesman to fill your classes, I'm telling you. But there's plenty of room out there in the firearms industry for good instructors. We need training. People need training. I think one of the big problems, we've had so many people get their concealed carry license and so many people buy guns, especially in the last 6 to 8 years. They've purchased them out of fear, or they've purchased them, you know, because something happened to them or whatever, and they lack the training. And no, I don't think the government should require training. I've gotten in trouble saying that before. No, but we should have training. And I don't think there's enough instructors, to be honest with you. I don't think that there's enough instructors out there. So I'm in no way offended by any instructors that overlap with other instructors, because everybody does something a little bit different. Everybody teaches something just a little bit different. And if you can go to a reasonably priced class and pick up one or two good ideas and walk out of there with one or two good ideas or one or two good ways of using your gun to be more effective, it's worth the time and the money you spent at the class, because that one or two techniques or ideas just might save your life. With that, I'm going to close with this. Thank you very much for letting me do 300 episodes, and thank you for listening long enough so that I could do 300 episodes. Many of you know the fight that I'm engaged in right now, and I'm not going to spend so much time on that in this episode because I feel like I spent too much time on that in the last few episodes. I don't know yet what 2015 holds for me. I don't know yet what I'm going to be able to do or not do in 2015. I've got some pretty good plans for 2015, but it remains to be seen what the good Lord's going to allow me to do. So I'll tell you this, There is a good possibility that I might take a break from podcasting soon. There's going to be a time here for about a 2 to 3 month period that I'm going to be undergoing some pretty intensive treatments and may not feel like doing any podcasting.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls May 16th and 17th, 2015 from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
And most of that's just going to be because of some treatments that I'm going through, not because I don't want to, but I may take a few breaks here, so if you don't see some new episodes for a few weeks, you'll know why. But I also want to let each and every one of you who listen to this know how much you mean to me. Some of you I will never meet, and some of you I'll never even communicate with you by email or voicemail or Facebook or anything, because you just listen, and that's fine. And I know I don't get an email from everybody, because I know how many listeners I get, and I don't really get quite that many emails. But from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much. This started off as just a hobby. It started off as something I didn't even know would work. I'm talking about this podcast. I didn't even know it would work. I was doing another podcast at the time, and I thought, you know what? There seems to be something about guns that I have to say and that I've learned. And, you know, I learned along the way. And some of you who were listening to me back in the early days, I don't know how you listened, because I've listened to some of those old episodes, and I didn't think they were all that good. But maybe you did. But you stuck with me, and you followed the journey with me from just being a guy who liked guns and shot IDPA once in a while to a guy who started up a podcast to a guy who decided to become a trainer. You know, folks, it's quite humbling. Some of you have said, well, Bob, I came to your training class because I wanted to meet you. You know how humbling that is, and I never thought that anybody would want to come to a class just to meet me. I hope that the people have also enjoyed the class that was taught as well. I've met some of you on airplanes when I didn't expect to meet you, and I think that's pretty cool. I've had a really, really good time doing this. And I intend to do it more, but I got to tell you that I may have to step back for a while so that I can get healed, so that I can continue and come back and do this full time and keep teaching full time or training full time. And so that's what I want to say. I'm not saying goodbye. I'm just saying that I may have to take a little bit of a break soon. Now, do me a favor. I'm having a problem with iTunes right now. So if you are subscribed to the podcast, do not unsubscribe. Do not unsubscribe, because for some reason iTunes has taken my show off of the search function, and they can't figure out why. They keep saying it's something with the feed. I may have to resubmit it or something like that. I'll put out announcements. The best thing, by the way, you could do is follow me on Facebook or on Twitter. Facebook, Handgun World on Facebook, Handgun World on Twitter. Or keep up with the website, handgunworld.com. I will put information on the website as well. about the show and about iTunes. You don't have to use iTunes to listen to my show. You can use Stitcher Radio. There's a bunch of other podcast catchers and things like that. You can listen straight from the website. You can go to handgunworld.com and you can stream it live off of the website too. It doesn't have to be iTunes. I know iTunes is very convenient and it saves it on your Apple device and things like that very conveniently. But there's a lot of different ways that you can listen to my show. Stitcher Radio seems to be very popular. So please also, if you're having problems with iTunes, use one of those other methods. Okay, folks. Well, that's my thank you, and that's my 300th episode. And don't forget a few things. Handgunworld.com is the website. My Amazon store, if you want to support my show, if you like what I do, and you don't want to spend any extra money, when you buy something from Amazon, use my Amazon store. And I'll get a part of the, I'll get a small commission. The classes for the remainder of 2014 and the one 2015 class that we have confirmed on my website, handgunworld.com, also Ben's website, modernselfprotection.com, Ben Branham from the Modern Self Protection Podcast, my co-instructor. Either one of us, you can find our websites there. The Shooters Club, don't forget to join the Shooters Club. Great instructional videos. We just put up a new video a couple weeks ago, a really good new video, $75 a year or $8 a month. You can sign up for that at handgunworld.com. And don't forget about a voicemail. If you want to leave me a voicemail comment about this show or any others, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. And there's also a call me button at handgunworld.com. With that said, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight. Shoot safe. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.